Welcome to Crafting Solutions to Conflict, a podcast that will explore ways to preserve harmony and prevent harmful conflict in valued relationships, and also ways to resolve conflict effectively and restore harmony if conflict should occur. I'm your host, Jane Bettle, and my goal is to share a perspective on conflict that is both practical and positive. Today's episode is part two of my conversation with Bruce Hammer. Bruce has some useful, as in put him into practice, insights on communication through his work as a psychologist, therapist, and leadership and organizational consultant. Don't miss part one, which is the regularly scheduled episode just before this one. There is a bonus episode in between because that covers a time-sensitive topic. Bruce and I had been talking about how we tend to speak in groups. When we have the floor, or the talking stick, we'll pick up the conversation there. Enjoy!
I think you bring up another point that's important to facilitate a good discussion, and that's the subjectivity of it, that different people have a different ability to think that what they're saying is reflective of nothing more than their beliefs, their experience, their view of what's being said. And that I always caution people to be very careful with the facts.
Oh boy.
The facts are certain set of data we consider facts. Tangible, objective, numbers, things happening like something fell down in the work area or nobody reported a certain incident. Those are facts. Most of the time people, though, are having problems not about the facts, but the interpretation they make about what's meant by those facts occurring. And like, you purposely didn't report that,
right,
or you carelessly knocked it over. So once you're down that road and conflicts building, I think it's always very helpful to emphasize that what you're expressing is the way you experience something, which leaves open the question of how the other person experienced it. Again, a learning opportunity that the conflict could really be about the way two people's experience of something differs. What it meant to me, which is why I'm enraged about what happened, what it meant to you, the impact on you, which maybe was nil, and so you don't even see why I'm having a problem with it. But once you get to how we were subjectively impacted and how we experienced it, we're in much better way to come up with a resolution or a solution, or simply to learn more about the impact of our actions on other people. And that often is the solution to these things, becoming more aware of what we weren't aware of before.
I think that's very powerful, so important, the idea of our own subjective views on virtually everything, informed by our own past experiences, for better and for worse. I also want to go back to something that you mentioned at the beginning of talking about that interpretation of the facts and whether it's purposeful, whether it's reckless, and how my experience is different from yours, but that's not at the forefront. Super. I also want you to talk a little more about, as you were introducing that, once we're down that path of conflict, what can we do to get ourselves out of the rut, off the cycle, whatever the metaphor is, but something about we need to change where we are today to a better situation. As I think of it sometimes, it's going from bad conflict to good conflict, the collaborative, creative type of conflict where we don't all see things alike, but that doesn't mean we need to attack each other. What are your thoughts on how people can make that change from, I'm in a bad place with this other person?
You know, what comes to my mind when I listen to your question is the place of what are the the goals of communication. I don't think people spend enough time considering what they expect to come from a certain communication. Different environments have different rules of what is expected when, say, people come together to resolve an issue. You just said something that I think is very true of teams. Mm-hmm. Most people that sit on a team or create a team, and most people that read research on teams, have come to realize that conflict is actually a necessary part of having a useful team. If you do not have any conflict and everyone is together on everything, you don't even need a team.
Right.
What is the sense of having a team? And you could extend that, I think, to marriages, and I think to friendships, and I think to parenting, and almost any human relationship where people have different expectations and comfort level about what happens when you realize that two people have very divergent ways of experiencing something and that one is getting in the way of the other and that there has to be some resolution there. I will also add, and I've said this before, it's important to my work, that communicating effectively evolves over mm-hmm. a period of time. People learn more about themselves. They learn more about what someone means by the way they express their complaints or their frustrations. And that's just part of the human condition. It's very rare that someone has a conflict and resolves it quickly. So I have a couple of rules there also.
Great.
Try to let people not box themselves in to having to go on with the conversation, having to respond to some new piece of information. That I try to encourage people to say that it's always kosher to say, I have to think about that. Let's set up another time to speak about it tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. people sometimes get themselves tied into a situation where they feel they haven't thought through. They don't really want to say stuff that's coming to their mind. They're not sure of are they being defensive or are they presenting a position that they really would take to the bank. And when you're in that situation, sometimes, hey, let's take a pause right now and get back to this tomorrow. I need mm-hmm. time to think about it and reflect on what you're saying is the better option. On the other side, when you asked about feedback before, when you give someone constructive feedback, don't box them into responding by saying, mm-hmm. how do you feel about that?
Yeah, right.
You could say, look, this is a lot. I'm sure the way you feel right now, you may feel differently in a few hours. And when you sleep on it, you might feel differently. Why don't you go home? It's the weekend. And Monday morning, we'll meet at 9 o'clock. And make some notes if you have some questions or if you thought of things that you'd like to say back to me about this. And we'll continue discussing this.
Yes.
I think that is a good way to get out of this the kind of unavoidable going over the waterfall moments, I say, that happens when you're working on conflict.
Yes, I can see that. And what comes to my mind also with both of these useful tips is they project the idea from the speaker, the one who is in the position of, I'm going to assume, giving the feedback, maybe a superior power position of, this is important to me. I care about how we work this out. And also that this is an interactive process that we are engaged in, as opposed to I announce to you, you take in what I tell you, and then magically you change to be the person I think you should be.
Right. Right. I think that's it.
I'd like to ask you, actually, a little more about the idea of the power differential in many relationships, especially in a workplace. How do people handle that, where truly one is the superior on the organizational chart? And if there is some kind of conflict over the way something's supposed to be done, over the way it was done, or I think it should be done in the future, and I'm the boss. Any thoughts on how to not fall into a situation where you're going over the waterfall?
Wow, that is a large topic, isn't it?
That may be a lot to take on.
Yes, that is a large topic. I think that what I will say about it in terms of what we're talking about today in with communication is the rules of what is considered communicating effectively, or the guidelines. Let's call them the rules of engagement.
Okay.
In an organization. People don't spend enough time delineating what those rules are. So on one team, you have debate that can get loud, that can get, in corporatese, passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, people never say they're angry. They say they're passionate. And in that way, a leader could say there's a phase one where anything goes in this meeting about what you think, what you want to have, what you believe about the other person, blah, 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 blah. And then there's phase two where I make a decision what we're doing, explain my reasoning to you, put up with some pushback, but in the end, I still make the decision. Mm-hmm. And then phase three is I expect everyone to get behind that decision, and it's the end of debate because mm-hmm. we have to move on. Now, if those are the rules of engagement, you can see it's easier to point out when either the leader or the members of the group are stepping outside of the rule box. But if you never bother doing this, then not only do you have irritating and confusing discussions going on at point three when everyone should be rushing to implement the decision and someone is still like refusing to do it, but sometimes that's just because they aren't clear that stage one, the door's been closed on stage one.
Yes.
You know, it was given time. Postmortems are often used in corporate world. I think that they should be used across the board in marriages and with kids and parents and with business teams and family businesses. Well, this is how our process went. How does it look now, looking back on it? Mm-hmm. What could we learn from it? And you could see how it could apply to working through conflicts. I think we learned that we spent one day with James trying not to say anything that would inflame anyone at all. And then that was a whole day and we didn't really get anywhere. So
that
next
would not
time,
be a good day.
Next time, we're just going to answer Jane's questions directly instead of hee-hawing it around and avoiding. And, you know, we'll get there quicker. But you could only say that if you found that once you did dive in and say things more honestly, it worked out well. Yes. Now, if it worked out terrible that you kind of dove in right away, you might say, next time we're all going to try to be more diplomatic. So there's things you learn in a postmortem.
And again, I hear you, not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but again, I hear you talking about the dynamic evolutionary process, but yeah, go right ahead.
Yes. Yeah. That is one of the themes that I work in. And I got another one that goes with that theme. We all like to back out of a discussion, a line that we're taking. Uh-huh. We've all gotten to a spot where we say, my own little postmortem right now says that I've said things that I really don't even believe because I've gotten a little irritated. So we have that famous word that's used by politicians constantly, I misspoke. I think we should all cut ourselves slack when we're trying to do something difficult, like working out conflicts. I think we should say that we all can go over the line a little bit. And if someone says, hey, I'd like to pull that back, you know, let's ignore that last comment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Our imperfections are always there.
Yeah. And let's give ourselves that, because we got a goal, right? And the goal is to work this out between us, not to be perfect in our attempt.
Yeah. I like that. I like that idea of allowing ourselves to be human and to, I think part of it is recognition that what we are, feud is strong, but what we are disagreeing about right now is something that matters to us. If I didn't care, and fine, do whatever you want. It just, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. And on that note, I'd love to turn your attention for a bit to something that we share, and that's our interest in family businesses and the potential there for good conflict where there is interaction that leads to good things, but also a lot of potential and anxiety, I'm going to say, about the potential for destructive conflict. What are your thoughts based on the work that you've done in that area?
That's a very challenging environment because there are certain communication styles and triggers and avenues taken that can date back in a family business to when the kids were 5 and 6 and 7.
Right.
And now you have years and years of communication styles that are now taking place in one environment when they originated in another, and there's a continuum there. I think we both noticed that in some ways families try to separate the environments because they often call their parents by their first name at work.
Right.
And refer to them as dad and mom at home. And if it was only that simple, it would be more effective. But it isn't that simple. And you often are crossing from having discussions that seem like family therapy to having discussions that seem like corporate executive coaching because there's a fluidity there. Also, family businesses are notorious for ignoring things that we've spoken about, such as rules, setting the stage,
yes,
having a process where you go from now we're closing down the discussion phase and we're going to the decision phase. Also, people don't even know who the decision maker is.
Right.
You know, sometimes nothing is clear. So I think what we've learned in our discussion is that when things are very unclear and everyone is moving from family to business environment to kids to the next generation management team and that swims along, it's hard to get a hold of a good discussion and resolve issues and move on from there.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure you do a lot of work in this area.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on these and on your points. And I think what comes to my mind right now is how you were discussing different environments have different cultures for these conversations. Even if the rules are not clear, there may be not necessarily very good ways we tend to do things, but this is how we tend to do things. But as you're describing, if you have different environments that are clashing, one is we're trying to run a business, one is we are a family, but not only are we today's family, we are the family we were when these folks who are now in their mid-30s or older were toddlers, that clash almost necessarily makes things difficult, especially, as you said, if people won't make explicit rules about this is the way we're going to do this.
Exactly.
And when you, I think the other thing that was very interesting that you touched on was this idea of avoidance. Can you talk a little bit more about, does it ever make sense when there is a conflict that is brewing, I'll say, to not address it? Or would you say that's always a situation. Always is never a good word. How's that? I'm getting both of my absolutes in one sentence. Generally not a good idea to ignore something in the belief it will get better on its own.
My off-the-cuff response is that as a psychologist, I'm in this peculiar space where I'm often the person in the room that thinks that the issue is really not personal, but organizational. And the people are expressing some frustration because the organization hasn't dealt with the issue. So that could be seen as a way of avoiding some personal conflict by reframing it as, well, I just said that right in my example.
There
you think
is.
You're having a lot of interpersonal friction, but actually you've not decided who's the decision maker. Mm-hmm. If you decided what the process is for making a decision, and you knew who the final decision maker was, you may find a lot of this conflict drifts away. So that's kind of like an organizational addressing of the conflict.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that comes to mind is we speak about not having unintended impact, not causing damage where you're trying to be helpful. So by that, we are really kind of checking the box that we call timing is important. We all think of how do we introduce this topic? When do we introduce it? So avoiding something in the moment or for some period of time is often the best way to have an intended impact down the line. You know, one of the things that you mentioned feedback earlier. And with feedback, there's really a time and place. And you shouldn't be giving feedback in front of people or at the moment that you're agitated or something happens. You should have a not too far in a distance, because that's also a very poor way to give feedback. At the end of the year, like 5 months ago,
really
were not. That's not very helpful. Yeah, avoidance is actually a technique along with asserting oneself or going in and saying, I'd like to speak to you about something that may be upsetting to you. When would that fit into your schedule? Oh, not at the beginning of the day, like at the end of the day. Yes, that makes more sense. At the end of the day. And of course, that famous time is always Friday afternoon.
I'd like to think of these sometimes as setting up these challenging conversations for success. And if your intended goal, and I think you've talked about that so well several times, if your goal is to make things better, well, you want the conditions to be right. If you want to blow off steam and show how angry you are, well, that's a different goal, not a very useful one most of the time. Then, you know, go ahead and blow everything up. But if you really want to have this be a productive conversation, well, yes, when and where and who needs to be there and who needs to not be anywhere near there, perhaps, seem like important considerations.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you very much so.
That's great. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for talking with me about all of this. Really some nice insights and some very practical ones, which I love, about communication and how to use it both to prevent a damaging conflict and how to help folks, if they're starting to have some troubles, deal with it more effectively. This is just the kind of thing that I like to be able to share with listeners. So I am grateful. Thank you. Bruce, where would people find you if they wanted to get in touch with you?
Well, Hammer Associates is my company.
Very good.
And you can Google me and come to my website.
Good.
And my phone number is 516-776-0236. And I'd love to sit down and talk about why you are contacting me regarding communication and organizational work, because I do a lot of aligning the organizational culture, structure, and processes to achieve strategic objectives. And communication, as I said, is one of those prime factors. Communicating effectively is the way to run your culture and your company to achieve those objectives. I would also add one thing I left out before,
sure.
which is that I have found this time with you, Jane, to be very helpful for my becoming more effective in communicating. So I left something out in my presentation, which is, you know, speaking to yourself and to other people is not only presenting your ideas, but I firmly agree with what I'm going to say. For me, maybe not for everybody, but for me, it's a place where I discover my ideas, where I fine-tune what I'm trying to say and realize, hey, there it is. That's what I'm trying to say.
Fabulous.
That's it.
Great, Bruce. Thank you so much. A final little gold nugget hidden at the very end. That's great. Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Same here, Jane. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the Crafting Solutions to Conflict podcast, please subscribe through one of the major apps or publishing platforms. For those of you who are new to listening to podcasts, here's something you may not know. Subscribing to podcasts is free. Comments or ideas about the podcast? Let me know at jb@dovetailresolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Jane Bettle.